Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today, I am joined by Shante Joseph. Shante is a writer, journalist, and digital content producer. She's also the host of the Guardian's Pop Culture podcast. So welcome to the Power Hour, Shante Joseph, aka CEO of Yelling.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting.
I'm so glad that we have managed to make the time, align our schedules to record this conversation. I've been looking forward to it all day. And first up, I have to start with this, CEO of Yelling. This might just be the world's best job title. So tell us, who are you yelling at?
Literally, it was like around New Year's in like 2020 or something, or around that time, and I was like with some friends, and like one of my friends was just like, you're basically the CEO of Yelling. And I was like, this is the best name I've ever heard. And I changed all of my social media to CEO of Yelling, and I've just never changed it back. And
Yeah, never change it back. It's the best. I mean, people are going to start taking that. But seriously, let's get into it, because Shante, you are a writer and a journalist. And I feel like journalism, like many other industries, continues to change at such a rapid pace. How we consume media today compared to even a decade ago is completely different. And it's just, I think, going to continue to change. So first up, I'd love to know, in your experience, what is it like to be a young journalist in 2023?
I think I feel like I exist on the periphery of journalism, not because I'm not doing it, but because I've never really worked in a newsroom or anything like that. I've always kind of been freelance. I've always kind of done journalism on the side of something else that I was doing. And it wasn't until 2020 that I went like full time, just like writing and pitching. And it's been like a very interesting experience. I feel like the experience of journalism as someone who's a staffer compared to someone who's a freelancer is very, very different. I feel like my income is so much more precarious. I feel like I'm having to like hustle a lot more than usual to like pitch ideas and make sure ideas are good enough. Then there's, you know, the editing process and the like commissioning process, and then invoicing and the whole kind of like journey you have to take as somebody who is like trying to get paid as a freelancer, which is so stressful. And I think things are just getting like worse and even more scary. And it's so funny because somebody messaged me on Instagram being like, oh, like, what tips can you give me as someone who's like first starting out in freelance journalism? And I was like, are you sure you want to do that right now? Like, are you seeing the way the industry is going? All of these legacy publications and papers shutting down, all of the jobs going, all of the low commission rates for pieces. Like, this just doesn't feel like a good time to be in this world, basically.
Yeah, God. Well, I have a few thoughts on that, because the freelance journey, freelance life, again, whatever industry, it is wild, actually wildness. Mm-hmm. And I think on the one hand, I wanted to ask you, like, do you feel like being freelance, as you said, not being tied to one publication or one media house, do you feel like in some ways that gives you more kind of creative freedom, or it gives you a freedom around your voice? And so you don't feel as though you have to, toe the line of a particular place?
Definitely. I feel like I went freelance in 2020, like during the pandemic. I was working before that for a social media agency. And it's so funny because like I used to work on their kind of biggest client, which was The Morning After Pill. So I basically spent like a whole year locked down writing tweets about like, this is how you get The Morning After Pill during lockdown. Like basically doing all this stuff. And I was like, but I love the agency so much. They were so lovely. There was such good vibes. But I was struggling. It was the longest ever job that I'd had, and it was I was there for 1 year, and I was just so used to kind of like job hopping post graduating in 2018 that I was just like, this is being there for a year, I thought I was going to die. And I was like, what is going on? And then basically I kind of started to look a lot into like ADHD and specifically how ADHD presents in women and Black women's experience of ADHD and diagnosis and whatnot. And then I kind of spoke to my workplace about this, and then they paid for me to get my ADHD diagnosis. And then I got it and I was like, amazing. And I quit my job because I was like, I'm so happy I know what's wrong with me. I am going to go and do my own thing. And basically, I've just never looked back since. And yeah, like the freedom it gives me, like in terms of what I want to work on and, you know, the sort of products I want to take up and where I want to take certain things and investing in my own ideas. But yeah, it also comes with all its own anxieties and struggles. Like, you're freelance as well, aren't you? So you know, like the vibe.
Oh my gosh, 15 years. Shantae, I am older than you. I am old. So 15 years.
I can't believe you don't look it. We could be age mates. Sorry. Like...
Thank you. Like... Thank you. I'll take that. But I mean, even the fact that my son is nearly 12 tells you a lot. But basically, I mean, so many things. So one, I mean, when you said what is wrong with me, the first thing I was like, no, let me stop you there, because it's not what's wrong with you. And I think even the words, you know, I've got a lot of friends who work in the medical profession, and even the words that they use within ADHD are kind of, I don't know, they're challenging in the sense that it does make people feel, and parents of ADHD children and siblings, and whether you're, you know, adults of ADHD, it just makes people think that this is disorder and it's, you know, it's going to be a limiting thing. And it's almost this idea that you can't do this because, instead of, you will do things this way because, and you will experience things this way because. And I'm not trying to say that, oh, you know, it's this, you know, people say it's this like hidden gem, and for people living with ADHD, they're like, no, it's not. But I think understanding that, I mean, firstly, amazing that you were able to, you know, get that diagnosis and to understand exactly what you said, like, I need to be working in this way. This is what's going to feed my own well-being and also get the best out of me so I can do my best work and be creative and share it. So yeah, lots of thoughts there, but we're looping back to this. I'm freelance. And I mean, the struggle is real with all the things that you mentioned, not just whether it's pitching or new clients or building new relationships or getting paid, but I also think the self-discipline required, you know, I talk a lot on this podcast about motivation and discipline, and it doesn't matter whether that's to run a marathon or whether that's to write a book, the discipline required, I think, to be a freelancer, to set yourself deadlines, to continue to do work when there's no one really standing there making you do it, is, it's mad, actually. How do you approach that? How do you stay, I guess, do you have a structure? Do you think of yourself as self-disciplined?
I was going to be like, no way. But I was like, actually, wait, really think about this question. Because like, yeah, you're right. It takes a lot for you to like manage yourself and do and like kind of take care of everything on your own. But I think for me, I think I kind of needed that. I hate the feeling of being micromanaged. I hate the feeling of like people breathing over my shoulder. Like, yes, sometimes I need pressure, and sometimes that pressure could just be the deadline approaching, or that pressure could just be a nudge from someone. But I think for me, that like the most helpful thing I've done is like kind of manage my energy more than I've managed my time. And I kind of always say this to people that like have ADHD, like it's less about like punishing yourself by locking away your phone so you do a specific task, and more about working with yourself and understanding what you do and don't have the capacity to work on in this particular moment. I think sometimes we work against our bodies because we're still trying to operate like in a world that we've kind of grown up in that's incredibly neurotypical, when we actually need to be like, wait a minute, like, how am I feeling right now? What is my energy going to allow me to do? Can I dedicate X amount of time to this task? Like, how can I give myself an incentive for doing this as opposed to a punishment? And I think it's just coming from school, right? Like, when you're not listening, when you're not concentrating, you're punished. And I think we take all of those punitive measures and we even apply it to our adult lives as people who have ADHD, as people who are neurodiverse. We punish ourselves for not doing the things that we think we should be doing because we're operating in a neurotypical framework. And so I think, like, for me, like, managing myself and managing my time has been all about managing my energy, like understanding when I am the most productive, understanding what time I take my medication, when does my medication hit, what task should I be doing during that time to get things done. And that's basically how I try to structure my life and structure my times. But some days, you know, some days I'm useless and I don't really like routines and structures that kind of go on forever. Like if I have a structure for a week, I might just do it for a week, or maybe I'll do it for 3 days, because you get bored of the repetitiveness and it becomes difficult to keep following it. Because yes, the structure can be helpful, but if it's boring, it becomes difficult to follow through. So I'm always thinking about how, especially like one thing, sorry, I know I'm going on mad tangents here, but like even on this point, like one thing I've been thinking about so much is like tracking my cycle. Like when, where am I in the cycle of my period? Like what, I know that the week before my period, it doesn't matter if I am on the strongest ADHD medication that has ever been prescribed in the history of the pharmaceutical industry. Yeah, it's not gonna work. It doesn't work. So I know during that period of time, trying to get certain tasks done or certain bits of work done is gonna be tough. So I have to be kinder to myself. So I have to give myself more time, or I delay it, or I ask for a new deadline. And so I think like the best way that I have been able to structure my time and manage myself is listening to my body and understanding my energy, and then applying what works well in the moments where I have the most energy to do those tasks. So yeah, it's a lot, but it's just a process of understanding yourself better.
Anyone who's listened to this podcast for a long time will know that I cannot talk enough to women about tracking their cycle and to understanding the impact that it has. I had actually a podcast right at the start of the year with a doctor specifically talking about this, because I wanted to, yeah, bring it to people's attention that it's not just this thing where women have to deal with, like, oh, you're feeling a bit down today, or you're feeling a bit, no, it is impacting your neurochemistry. It is impacting your physiology, your sleep, your hormones, your appetite, everything. And I'm someone who, again, I've tracked my cycle now for about 2 years, and I try as much as I can to structure. I structured my entire training plan for the London Marathon around my cycle because I had to. So it's very impactful, very important, and I hope that people will hear that. And so right back at the start, you said that someone reached out to you and said, you know, any tips, any advice? And you were literally like, wow, you know, like, stay away. But I think considering all those things that you've just said, would that, you know, giving advice then, I suppose, to someone who says, okay, journalism, freelance life, what's your advice for me? Given what you've said around the industry and kind of more mainstream, such as print and even writing long form articles, do you think that that's where things like podcasts, things like audio content, video content, do you think that is, I don't know, I guess media kind of is all blended now, right? So it doesn't matter. It's just a different way of people consuming media. Would you say to people, actually explore lots of different mediums to do the same thing?
Yeah, 100%. I think obviously I host the Guardian's Pop Culture podcast, so I'm now firmly within the audio space. But I've always been like a lover and consumer of podcasts, like not so much this week because it's been a bit mad, but normally every single day I share a new podcast that I've listened to on Instagram, and I talk about why I liked it and why I didn't like it, what I liked about the sound design, what I liked about the narrative, what I liked about like the production or the guest selection. Or do you know what I mean? Like I've always had a very, very kind of like in-depth like love of audio. And so I think it's really important for people to explore things outside of that. And also for me, like, yes, I am doing kind of like the journalism and the writing and then the podcasting, but then I'll do like lots of things like consulting for brands, or I'll do talks, or I'll do like Instagram ads, or so I am like making money wherever I can across the media. Like, do you know what I mean? And even within the space of writing, there'll be like essay writing and book writing and script writing and story producing. And so like, I just feel like you, like maybe there is a type of media that you like or a topic that you like, and then just figure out how many things within that space you can do, how many skill sets you can basically rack up. And even if it's just like one thing that you're really good at doing, like how can you then apply this to multiple things? Because I also write for brands, like doing like copywriting and then doing like feature writing. And so there's like the industry is huge, and I think if you are skilled at writing, like think about where else you can apply that beyond just like writing for national papers and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you think about the role of long form content? Because I think the reason that I'm similar to you in the sense I love podcasts, I listen to so many every single week, and I have done for a very long time. And for me, for two reasons. One is because I much prefer audio. I'm an audio learner. That's how I retain information. I can listen to a book and tell you 90% of the book, but if I read the book, it's going to take me ages and I'm not going to remember it. So for me, I'd figured that out after leaving school, annoyingly. And I was like, oh, wow, like I'm an audio learner. So learning by audio is great for me. So I'm like, okay, podcasts, give it to me. And the fact that I don't have to look at something, for example, a screen, because I listen to it when I'm running, I listen to it when I'm driving my car, I listen when I'm cooking. Yeah. So long form, I'm happy. Honestly, I listen to some podcasts that are 2.5 hours and people say to me people say to me 2.5 hours, like, who's listening to that? And I know that in a world of, you know, tweets and memes and clickbait and quick, there's obviously a lot of people who still want long form. So yeah, how do you think long form content fits into the current media landscape?
I think there's still more room for it. There's still space for it. And I think even like something being long form, like, can literally even be a film. Like, people will sit through Avatar. Avatar's like 16 hours long. Like, come on now. You can listen to a long podcast. Like, the film about the blue things fighting each other for 17 hours. Everybody needs to behave themselves, okay? And so I think, yeah, there's a lot of space for it. Even when it comes to long form journalism, a lot of the time now articles will have an option to listen to the article instead of reading it. So that's a big thing. Then you kind of see a lot of podcasts being created out of certain aspects of journalism. So you have the Modern Love podcast, which is like the New York Times column that is now turned into both a TV series or a series on a streaming platform. So it's on Amazon. Mm. And then there's also the podcast that exists for it as well. And so, like, there's a lot of that stuff happening when the two worlds are colliding, and if you struggle to consume something in one way, there's always another way to do it. But even then, I think, so I sat on the judging panel for the bookseller book of the year, British Book of the Year Awards, and I sat on the audio nonfiction panel judging, and it was really, really interesting, because I definitely feel like, particularly in the audio book space, there is still like a lot of opportunity for people to be more kind of creative with the types of audiobooks that they're producing and how they use different elements of sound. At the moment, it kind of just feels like people think, oh, if you have an audiobook, you just read the book and then you upload it and it begins and ends there. And I always find that really strange, because it just feels like there's a total sort of like lack of like appreciation for the art that is audio and audio experiences. There are so many incredible audio dramas that I've listened to and felt scared because of the way the sound design is and stuff like that. And like, I feel like slowly, as you say, we're moving towards more long form and people maybe don't have the attention span to sit and read through things or even watch things. Like, we're going to start to really see like audio really take off and lots of things, exciting stuff happening in that space. So I think there's a lot there if you're willing to like take the time to learn and explore.
Yes, I really hope so. And as we've said a few times, you are the host of the Guardian Pop Culture podcast. Now, here for that. Now, the words pop culture, it's quite funny because I was doing homework. I mean, I shouldn't be doing it, but I was supporting my son's learning, aka doing homework. And he was talking about, we had to find a poet, and I introduced him to George the Poet, and we were talking about pop culture. And he was kind of, he said to me, you know, what's pop culture? What's culture? And it's quite interesting to try and explain to an almost 12-year-old boy what the word culture means. And I was talking to him about, you know, emerging trends, and talking to him about observing kind of signals of change or things that lots of people care about. And the example that I gave him for him and his friends and his peers was gaming. So it got me thinking, and I kind of thought, well, this is your world, you know, everything from your writing to the podcast. And just this is why I love following you on social media. But I was interested to find out, where do you observe signals of change, emerging trends? And where do you, I suppose, look and listen and try to understand what's relevant to young people and what they really care about right now?
I think I look a lot to places like TikTok. I think I also look a lot to places like Reddit. Because I just feel like the kind of the subreddits and the threads that exist in Reddit are so interesting. I also feel like the demographic of people that use Reddit are quite young as well. So many Reddit threads I've been in, people are like 14 or 15. And so I'm always kind of reading them, seeing what people are talking about, seeing what media people like. Obviously, TikTok is just like, you know, a huge black hole for when it comes to like what's coming up and trends and the it girl or the villain era or whatever it is. Like, it's such an interesting place to find and understand those things. So I'm always on those spaces as well. And then also just like talking to my siblings, like my little sisters, I'm always fascinated about what is kind of so exciting and important in their world. Like, who is it that they look up to? What is it that they're listening to? What do they like to dress as? And so I think of a lot of that stuff I look to for emerging trends. And then even when I'm thinking about, when I'm reading, I'm looking at places like The Cut and kind of all of those sort of websites like Vulture. Mm. I'm just like very kind of intrigued by people's like takes on things that are happening culturally and where they want to take it, and also subcultures and where they come from and how people are adopting them and whether or not they exist. Like, I'm always kind of looking at all of that stuff. So I follow like loads of people and I try to subscribe to as many different like newsletters and publications as I can. And then I'm always like following as many like young influencers and personalities on places like TikTok, because I'm just like, I know you're going to have something fascinating to tell me. So I'm very in their world.
I love this. I mean, you're dropping so many, like, people grab a pen and write them down, because I'm always looking for new things as well, just to like basically refresh my own mind, my own feed. As I mentioned, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and sometimes I'm like, I have listened to my favorite podcasts, I've listened to all the episodes, I need something new. And I'm always trying to just like add new things. And I, similar to you, you know, I do brand advisory work, and sometimes one of the most frustrating things, I don't know if you've had share this experience, is that when you're speaking to brands about, I feel like sometimes I'm the youngest person in the room. And I mean, that says a lot, because as I said, I'm in my 30s. And if I'm the youngest person in the room and they're talking about, you know, I don't know what young people want or what Gen Z care about or what Gen Alpha are going to care about when it comes to consumer habits and decisions, it often just feels like the decision makers don't always want to hear me say to them, well, my younger sibling who's this age, or my son who's this age, this is how they use search, or this is what they care about. And they kind of just, I don't know what it is about poo-pooing this kind of like listening to young people, but I'm kind of thinking the businesses and brands that are willing to do that, surely they're going to win.
Yeah. But the thing is as well, I don't know, I find that like at the moment, what we're seeing, particularly in the media with all of these publications shutting down, like it does all feel like a lot of youth-focused media that is kind of being swallowed up and is like ceasing to exist now. And I do find that stuff so interesting, because I just feel like when we lose these spaces, or when we, you know, potentially lose a Vice or lose an ID or lose a Paper Mag, or do you know what I mean? Lose a BuzzFeed. It's like, what then replaces this? Like, how do we kind of like verify our news sources? How do we know what's happening in the world? How do we find stories that appeal to us and places that will take our stories and care about our stories? And I just find it, so interesting that it just feels like, you know, this is the generation that you want to cater to, because they're going to be the future of your market and stuff. But at the same time, it just feels like the places that they look to, or the places that have like done a great job of archiving the culture and predicting the future, are now going. So it's like, it's such an interesting one.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe some big opportunities there as well. I want to do a complete 360, 180, whole new topic. I have been looking forward to speaking to you, Shantae, about travel. Now, during the pandemic, I mean, everyone says this, right? Oh, we had the travel bug. Can't wait to travel. I'm going to go and see the world as soon as I can leave my house. Get me on a flight. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people. And earlier on in my life, I didn't really get many opportunities to travel. So growing up, you know, my mum was a single mother with a low income, so we weren't going anywhere. And then when I got older, I don't know, I just, you know, I didn't go to university. I didn't have a gap year. I didn't do any of those things. And I became a parent. And I don't know, I just didn't have that experience. So later on in my life, I definitely felt like I was making up for lost time, and I just wanted to go everywhere, see everywhere. So during the pandemic, I wrote a list of places in the world that I want to explore. And I recently just came back from my first visit to Asia. I went to, oh my gosh, it was the dream. I went to Japan with my son, both of us together, just the two of us. And we just had this amazing adventure visiting his friend, actually, not mine. And it was incredible. And it was, it was something I, like I said, had been craving throughout the pandemic. Now, I know that you also love to travel. I know that I've seen you talking online about travel and about specifically about solo travel. So that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. Let's get into it. Tell us about your experience about solo travel, what you love about it, what you maybe don't like about it. Over to you.
Oh my days. Listen, also Japan sounds absolutely amazing. Like I haven't even like begun to touch that part of the world yet, but it's definitely on my list of like of places to go. I'm trying to do as much as I can in this time, but like solo travel, yeah, to me is just so important. It's so healing. It's the best thing I ever decided to do. Like you, yeah, I didn't grow up in a rich family. Like there wasn't a lot of opportunities or chances to travel. It was like quite far and few between. And so I also like didn't do a gap year. All I've done is work. Like since I got yes. a, you know, national insurance number, so, I worked and I worked all the time and I worked every summer and I worked, do you know what I mean? I'd never had the opportunity. And then before I even graduated uni, before I even sat my exams, I got like a postgraduate internship that I started. And so I'd never got that break like ever. I did a gap year and I worked the whole year at the Bank of England. So I'd never had any time to basically do all those things. And so I kind of, yeah, like you, post-pandemic was like, do you know what, something absolutely needs to change? And I remember kind of just growing up, always trying to organize like places to go with my friends, and it was just so stressful because everyone was busy on this day, and trying to organize them was just ridiculous. And I was like, do you know what, if I want to do this stuff, I have to do it myself. I can't wait for my friends. I can't wait for some imaginary boyfriend to show up. Like, I have to just go and do the things. And so during in 2021, like, I know travel was still a bit iffy there, but I went and spent a month in Lisbon. I didn't know anyone from Lisbon. I didn't speak a lick of Portuguese. I'd never been there before. Wow. Someone once was like, oh, there's black people in Lisbon, it's lit. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't even remember who said it. I just remember someone said that once to me. And I was like, I need to go. I moved back home at that time, so I was living with my grandma, and like I love my grandma so much, but I was like, wow, I really need the space, and I didn't want to pay for some expensive Airbnb in London. I was like, might as well just go to a different country. So yeah, I just left, went to Lisbon for a month. It was amazing. I met so many friends. Like, I had an incredible time, and basically I've been back to Lisbon every single year, twice a year since I first went. Wow. Because I'm just like, I love it there. It's my second home. Like, my people are there. It's like where I feel happiest. And then after that same year, I just went to travel around like Seville and Malaga and all of those places by myself for 2 weeks. That was amazing. And then I went to like Lisbon again by myself. And then last year I went to Croatia by myself. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. And then I also went to Brazil for 1 month by myself solo. You know, never been, didn't really know anyone, and was just like, do you know what? If I loved Lisbon, you know, so many of the incredible people I met from Lisbon are from Brazil. I was like, let me just go to Brazil by myself for 1 month. And I did it, and it was just incredible. And obviously people were mad scared, like, oh my God, what if this happens? You're going to get snatched. You're going to get killed. And I came back and I lived to tell the story. So what's good? You know, like, it was fine. Like, people want to scare you so bad. Like, oh, don't get me wrong,
it's Liam Neeson. We have to blame for this.
Listen, my dad kept being like, you know, I don't have a certain set of skills, you know. I was like, Dad, listen, I'm going to be fine. But yeah, I was sick.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I saw it, as I said. I was living vicariously at the time because I was here in the dusty, grey UK, and I was so happy to see your sunshine and vibes. And Brazil is actually on my list as well. So yeah, maybe afterwards we can kind of compare things between Brazil and Japan. And I think you mentioned the word healing, and you said, you know, it's just this... There's something I think about going to a new environment where, whether it's, you know, the language, whether it's the food, whether it's the culture, whether it's the people, this is why I really wanted to do this experience with my son, is because, yes, I didn't have it myself growing up, but I know that his life now is very different to the life that I had. So there's all these different challenges there where I'm trying to show him different, basically, not just his world, his school, his friends. So yeah, when you said, okay, the fear thing, that comes up for a lot of people. They might be scared, they might say, oh, it's not safe, especially as a woman, especially as a black woman, like, these places don't go there, it's not safe. But when you were there, you said then, you're like, oh, I made loads of friends. How did you meet friends? What was that experience like? Did you, you know, you're confident, I want to assume an extrovert, I don't know if you'd agree, but how did you actually meet new people and establish relationships and feel safe to do that?
So basically, this is how you do it, because everyone always asks me this. So I'm so glad you asked it. Then I can just send everyone this podcast and they will know. When you're going to a new place for the first time, if you are like not confident at like, you know, just going up to people and joining conversations, then like the number one thing to do is obviously book a whole load of like tours and excursions, whether they're free walking tours or like cheap, like, you know, hiking tours or whatever it is, like, book all of that stuff. Because when you go to these tours, you're in an environment where everyone is here for the same reason, because they're here to do an activity. So it's easy to talk to people because it's not weird and out of context to chat to them. Like, it makes sense. And so that's a brilliant way to meet people. The apps, things like Bumble, BFF is a great way to meet people. A lot of like countries have like Facebook groups for travelers. Like when I went to Lisbon, I joined the like Black in Lisbon Facebook group, and I met this amazing guy there called Edson, who just knows every single Black person in Lisbon, like, period. And I just basically hung out with him all the time, and he introduced me to loads of people and allowed me to meet loads of friends. So join the Facebook groups, join the meetup groups, like any sort of like online like community that for a specific place, and join it. Even like Lisbon now has like a Black in Lisbon Instagram page where you can follow them, and if you're traveling to Lisbon soon, you can see what events they have going up or what things they recommend going to. And then on top of that, like, I stayed in a lot of hostels. I stayed at the Selina mainly in all of the countries I've stayed in. And you just go to different nights in the hostel and you kind of meet people there. And we're in the kitchen, in the communal areas, the staff, like, hostels often do like events and tours of their own where you can go and meet people. At the Selina, they always have a welcome drink on like the first night. And so you can go there and meet new people. So I did a lot of that stuff as well. And then, yeah, literally just talking to people. Like, yeah, of course, that's a very intimidating thing, and not everyone feels like they can do that. So don't do it if you don't feel like you can. But, like,
but when
it's
you lay
also
it out,
just easy to chat.
Yeah, when you lay it out like that, I think that sounds, yeah, sounds really doable, really achievable. I think people have maybe an idea in their mind that they're going to book a flight, arrive in a hotel, get a card, go into a hotel room and sit down and go, okay, I'm in Lisbon, I'm by myself. Mm-hmm. But I think what you've just described sounds exciting and engaging. And, you know, without the risk of sounding cheesy, I'm like, I don't mind sounding cheesy because I am Mrs. Motivation, Mrs. Optimism. Mm-hmm. And I often say to people, I'm like, you have one life, you know, inaction is the greatest risk. So ultimately it's like, mm-hmm, you have to at least be willing, if you're going to complain about it or you're going to kind of talk about it. To be honest, I'm calling myself out now because I have talked to my siblings about getting a tattoo for about 10 years, don't have a tattoo. So, but if you're going to do that, then it's like, you've got to take action and you've got to, yeah, be willing to do something and to try.
And sometimes if you just do it, you know, yeah. Like, I remember when I got my first tattoo, literally some girl messaged me on Instagram, was like, oh, our tattoo studio is having an opening, do you want to go? I was like, yeah. And I got there and they were doing free tattoos and they were like, just pick anything off the wall. I was like, I'll have that one. Like, sometimes you just can't, you don't think about it too much and just do it. Because I think sometimes thinking is the thing that stops you from actually like taking the action. Because why are you analysing all the possible outcomes when you could just do the thing and then think about it later?
With the exception of a tattoo, which is probably an irreversible decision, but you know.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so we've talked about journalism, we've talked about the industry, we've talked about travel, and I also wanted to talk to you about well-being. Now, when I say well-being, as I, you know, I've worked in the well-being industry, I suppose, for the last like 12 to 13 years, and I think it's finally something that is no longer just an isolated, you know, well-being. It's actually being recognized as an integral part of every single person's life. It's not optional, it's not a luxury, it's actually, you know, if you have a body, if you have a mind, then you have a state of well-being, and that could be good or it could be poor or it could be optimal. But I wanted to talk to you, I suppose. You mentioned at the start actually about how you manage your energy, and you know, I know that you like to exercise, I know you like to work out, mm-hmm, I know you like to break a sweat, and yeah, I wanted to talk to you about how you approach maintaining and sustaining your own well-being.
I think it's like there's like, I guess there are like layers to it. Like, of course, exercise is like a huge, huge one. And for me, it's like, I love going to my 6:45 a.m. spin class. Like, I'm going to be there on a Monday and on a Wednesday. And basically what I used to do is I kind of got into it because I basically just wanted to do the very first gym class of every day. And so the first class of the day at my gym used to just be spin at 6:45. And I just got into a habit of doing it because I was like, if I don't exercise first thing in the morning, then it's either not going to happen or I'm going to have a class later on in the day. And my anticipation from that class is going to stop me from doing the things that I need to do. Because I feel like a huge thing with ADHD is this sort of like this like time blindness, this inability to understand how long it takes to do a certain thing. And so sometimes if you have something at 5 p.m., you're like at 11 a.m., you're like, God, I don't want to start this thing because then I'm going to get into the flow. And basically, like, it becomes a huge thing. So I work around that by, you know, exercising first thing in the morning. So that's a huge thing for me. And then as well, picking exercise that's fun. Obviously, I've been doing pole dance for like 5 years now. I absolutely love pole dance. It's incredible. And it's now opened up the world of like aerial skills to me. So now I go to a lot of hoop classes and a lot of trapeze classes, and the studio that I do aerial hoop and trapeze at have just started a beginner straps class, so I'm going to start going to that on a Thursday afternoon. And it's like, I am just really enjoying exercising and enjoying moving my body, and it's not because I want to lose weight or I want to look a particular way or I have a body goal in mind. It's just that it's a fun thing to do that like helps me release a lot of my energy and helps me to focus. And so that's a huge part of it. And then I think like also like food, like what I consume is like such a big thing as well. Things like, I know how dairy makes me feel. I know I shouldn't have like too much of it. Or there are certain things that I just know I can't consume. And then being like, not punishing myself or being strict with myself, but being like, how is it that this thing is making you feel? And how do you manage that? So that's a huge part of it as well. And then also like, I guess the last thing is just like my skin and my body and this whole idea of like always having this ritual in the evening of like putting on my moisturizer and like having that as part of like wellness for me, because it makes me feel happy. I feel like I'm taking care of myself. It's like it's a nice feeling to wrap up a long day with like nourishing my skin and just being really kind to myself and really gentle, and like that sort of like touch. It's honestly just the nicest way to like end a day where you're kind of still prioritizing wellness, but it's like fun and it doesn't feel too arduous. So yes. I feel like I think about wellness on so many layers.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. It's this 360 thing. And again, you know, just because I work in the industry and I say this to, you know, a lot of people, whether it's in keynotes, whether it's in talks, whatever, I talk about these different parts. So there's the physiology part, as you described, exercise is only one part. And then nutrition for your body, but nutrition for your mind. Like, what do you listen to? What do you read? Who are you talking to? Then there's, as you described, you know, time management. That is actually something in itself. So many people feeling time poor, feeling like they never have time for themselves, constantly trying to, you know, we all can feel that sometimes, but stress and overwhelm and leading us to be burnt out. And then yeah, that nourishing part that you described with, you know, taking care of your skin and doing something that feels nice. And actually, when I had, again, a previous guest, she had written a book called Real Self-Care. And what she was essentially doing with this book is challenging the idea that we're just being told, oh, run a bubble bath and oh, put cream on your face. And she was like, that is not real self-care. It's a really great book, actually. I recommend it to a lot of people. But I kind of felt like I had to confess to her that I was like, you know what? I'll be honest with you. I know that I need to prioritize nutrition and sleep and all these things and exercise. Of course, I know those things. It's my job. But I am not going to lie. I love to moisturize my face, put on a candle. Like, I love those things as well. And so it doesn't have to be this binary, you know, this is self-care, this isn't self-care. I think whatever you decide is your kind of, yeah, well-being practices, whatever you think and experience that helps you to feel good and manage your energy, I think just, yeah, works for you.
Yeah, agreed.
What about your, I suppose, emotional energy? So, yeah, is there something in particular that you do? Some people may be talking therapy, might be journaling, it might be that the physical stuff is kind of, you know, feeds into that as well for you. But yeah, how do you manage your emotional well-being and emotional energy?
Gosh, that's such a good question, because I just feel like currently I'm definitely not doing a good job of that. I used to do therapy and I used to have an ADHD coach as well. And that used to be like really, really helpful, because I guess therapy helped me to deal with a lot of the emotional issues. And then my ADHD coach helped me think like more practically about like how my, I guess, how like the fluctuation of my emotions like prevented me or encouraged me to do work. And then she helped me think a lot about, like, in the practical sense, how I arrange my life around how I feel, and how I analyze what things, what tasks, like, give me negative feelings, why I avoid, like, putting away the clothes after I've taken them off the radiator. Like, what is it that I need to do to basically do those tasks? So I think about my emotions in more depth, and that helps me to become more productive. But I haven't done both of those things in a while. And I definitely feel like I'm noticing the effect of it. Like, with my coaching, I think I just needed it a bit less. With therapy, you know, I was in, when I was in Brazil, I was just happy and enjoying my life. Yeah. And I would have therapy, and my therapist would be getting me to be talking about, I don't love myself enough. And I was like, do you know, I'm really not trying to hear all that. I'm just trying to shake my ass in the sun. I'm not trying to hear any of this I don't love myself stuff. Like, maybe when I come back, and then I just never arranged it. So it's something I definitely need to go back to. But I think, yeah, I think I've started, like, journaling more, like, writing a lot of like affirmations, like, and I've been deep in that, like, spirituality, the universe TikTok, right? And I know it's crazy there. So you have to take a deep breath before you step in there, right? But honestly, in some senses, there's something that's quite, like, reaffirming, or just there's something nice about, you know, following all of these kind of spiritualists on TikTok who talk about, you know, the universe timing, and, you know, let things unfold, and what's meant to be will be. And I don't know, I've been kind of, like, fueling myself up on a lot of that stuff as well. Then also, like, a huge thing for, like, my emotional well-being is, like, a sense of community. Like, I think I'm quite privileged to be, like, one of the only people in my friendship group who, like, lives by themselves, like, rents by themselves. And so I try to do a lot for my friends. Like, I host my friends a lot. I had a taco night the other night, or I'll have a movie night when a film's come out that I want to see, or I'll just have a gathering for the sake of having a gathering. Like, community is so important. Like, making sure I'm there for my friends, and my friends have somewhere to escape to, and we can all be together, because I think it's something that's harder to do, especially when going out is really expensive, like the cost of living. Like, not everyone wants to go and spend lots of money on a meal. And that's why, like, for my birthday, I hosted, like, an aerial party, and I paid for it, like, 13 of my friends together to come and experience doing aerial for the first time. So half of them did hoop and half of them did silks, and it was amazing. And, like, I paid for it because it was kind of like, yes, it was my birthday, but I invited you here, and it's, like, kind of like my gift to you. And I just think, yeah, where I can, I want to provide those spaces and experiences for my friends to kind of come together and have a good time without having to pay so much to do things in the first place. So well, yeah, that's really important to me.
Well, we all need a friend like you, Shantae. And I'll be honest, this is, like, weird confession, but I saw that birthday party. I saw you posted maybe on Instagram or on Twitter, and I was like, oh my gosh, this girl. Because exactly what you just described around, you know, you're in your 20s and you said you live, you host your friends, you have these, you know, you might think, I don't know, everyone looks at everyone else's life, of course, don't they? And makes assumptions about it. But I feel like in the last few years of my life, being in mid-30s, having not only my son, but also stepchildren, so different commitments there, you know, you can imagine my weekends sometimes between football training and tutoring and swimming lessons, you know, there's a lot. And then because many of my friends didn't have children when I did, they're having babies now, I've now got the thing where friends are pregnant or they've got a baby. And it's just this idea of actually bringing your friends together, having the time to share with your people. It does, I don't want to say for everyone, but in my experience, it gets less and less and less as you get older. Your friendship group gets smaller and smaller, and that's okay because, you know, that's life, and I have wonderful friends. But I saw that party and I was like, I want to be Shantae's friend. I want to invite myself to her birthday party. I was like, this is such a vibe because you're with your people and you have the time and energy to give back to them.
Honestly, it's so true. And I think, like, that's one thing I get scared of as well. I guess, like, as I'm seeing more and more my friends, like, you know, get into relationships and get like engaged. And I'm like, guys, we're 27. Can everyone just be relaxing? But okay. Like, do you know what I mean? I was like, at first it was cute at the beginning. Now I'm getting scared. But I just feel like, I try to facilitate as much as I can, but also I try to get comfortable in being by myself. Like, I guess living by myself and traveling by myself. Like, I'm just so used to being on my own and I love my own solitude and I love my own company and I don't feel any type of way doing things alone. And I think I've worked on that for so long as well. So it's just like, even outside of kind of seeing my friends, like I spend probably most of my time by myself. And it's like, you have to just get to a whole new level of like, I like me before, you know, you can do that and feel entirely comfortable. And I think that's also been a huge priority for me.
Yes. And it's honestly, I feel like for many people, it becomes a luxury because trust me, I love my life. I love my husband. I love my kids. It goes without saying. And we're together all the time. Like literally me and my husband, we are joined at the hip these days. I love it. But honestly, solitude is a luxury. When you have like, that's why I run. I'm like, I'm running myself for 1 hour every day. So yes. And let's actually, I could talk to you for ages. I've, like I said, was looking forward to this, but conscious that we don't have all day, sadly. So the last part of the show, the Power Hour, I ask every single guest to share with us what they typically do in the first hour of their day. Now, as you can imagine, after 4.5 years, we've heard lots of different things. Some people have a very regimented, structured morning routine, which enables them to do lots of things. Other people are far more gentle and slow in the morning. Some people, every single day is different. And some people are international DJs who are coming in when I'm waking up. So can you tell us, Shante, about the first hour of your day? What do you typically include? Anything that you avoid? And also what time you start the day?
So this is an interesting one. I feel like every single day it tends to be different. If it's a Monday or it's a Wednesday or maybe some other times in the week, I always try to go to the very first gym class of the day. And so that just means basically I wake up maybe half an hour before the class starts because I'm a like very short walk to my gym and my gym's bloody expensive, but I actually make the most of it because it's so close. And so I literally kind of probably spend the first hour of the day getting up, like shouting at my Alexa to be quiet 15 times and then like rolling out of bed, putting on my gym clothes that I laid out the night before, putting on my shoes, brushing my teeth and just running out the house. Because if I don't do it immediately, if I stay in bed for even one more second, oh my God, I'm not going anywhere. And so I have to get my ass up and I have to run out the house. But if I'm not at the gym, then I will have like a very, very kind of slow morning. Like I kind of like the first thing I do is I'll take my ADHD medication because I'm like, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to remember to do it. And I kind of, I turn on Sky News. Like I watch Sky News religiously, like so much so, like I could probably present the morning show myself because I know it that well.
She's ready.
So it's literally, it's the first thing I do every day. I mean, sometimes it's not great because, you know, the news is often bleak, but I like to feel informed. I like to feel like I know what's going on. And then once I'm like ready to shower and stuff, I think it's probably an ADHD thing, but I put on a podcast that is a specific amount of time long and I have to get showered and ready before that podcast finishes. And it's just a way for me to like be aware of my own time blindness. And then the rest of my day just continues from then. So yeah.
No, I like it. It sounds great. And also I love how you know, we talked about it at the start with the ADHD, but you're essentially creating tools in your life and frameworks that work for you. And I have a friend who has ADHD and he basically said that when he was younger, he's quite forgetful. He forgets things. He loses things. And he said that when he was younger, he would often be scolded for this by his parents. And I actually think as a parent myself, I'm listening and learning because I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm constantly saying to my son, you know, like you've got to start being responsible for your own water bottle or whatever. Boring. But he was saying, yeah, I used to forget stuff all the time. And so he said, now I just have these frameworks and prompts. So it might be that there's literally a post-it note on my front door that has the things, or it might be that he's like, I put my keys, my phone, my everything in the same place every day because I don't want just constantly. He said it's the same now at 40 as it was at 30, at 20 and at 12. So it's not necessarily that, you know, oh, you're just gonna figure it out. It's like actually setting yourself your own frameworks that are going to help you to, whether that's in your morning routine like you said, or whether it's throughout the day. I think and again, ADHD or not, I think we could all do sometimes with just making our lives a little bit easier for ourselves by giving ourselves some kind of prompts and cues and reminders, and not just, you know, like we sometimes berate ourselves for like, oh, why haven't I done all these things? And you know, I'm a mess. I guess people tell me that all the time. Like, oh, I'm just a mess. And it's like, no, let's be a bit more compassionate and also make it easier for ourselves. Give yourself a chance, set up some stuff that's going to help you.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's so easy to berate yourself. And I feel like I spent a lot of time with knowing I had ADHD and not knowing I had ADHD being really harmful to my body. And I always think about like how when I was younger, I used to have a lot of like caffeine tablets, a lot of energy drinks, a lot of coffee, like just ruining like my poor body, because I just didn't understand what was going on. And all I did was punish myself like physically and mentally. And so I think when you learn to stop taking such punitive measures and you learn to work with your mind, it's just so much better for you.
Are you caffeine sensitive? Do you have caffeine now, or have you cut caffeine out?
I've basically cut caffeine out, and I have this thing, there's this brand called Dirty, and they have this like mushroom coffee that I've been like drinking instead of my normal coffee, and it's like 0.05% caffeine or something like that. And so I've kind of just been having that like occasionally, like gosh, sometimes if a day is really stressful then I will have coffee, but I think I have to be very sensitive about when I take my medication and when I have coffee, because if I have them too close together, then like the heart palpitations will be crazy. I'm trying to be caffeine free.
Yeah, I ask you because I'm very caffeine sensitive, and so I love coffee and I wish I could drink lots of it, but I have to limit it. And actually I also have a coffee brand that I love, you might want to try, called London Nootropics. They are a mushroom coffee brand. They do different ones that I think the way they label them is like Mojo or Zen, but you can actually read whether it's Ashwanga, whether it's Lion's Mane, and the different mushrooms. I'm not sure what the caffeine intake is on all of them, but I absolutely love those. And I feel like for me, they're a good alternative. They taste different to coffee, so they're a bit more kind of
definitely
nutty. But honestly, I don't work for their brand, but I wish I should, because I always tell everyone about them basically. Well, that is, I think, all we have time for. And I can only thank you again for being so generous, so candid, so honest, and giving us your time and energy today.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so good.
Oh, thank you. And thanks, everyone, as always, for tuning in. I'm going to be back next week with another episode. See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.